morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
Yes, yes, yes. I am here. I'm here somewhere, running around, trying to do everything at the last minute. Four guests in the studio will do that to you. So much time. And the more guests you have at your party, the more preparation there is to do. 11 o'clock here on Sunday morning. Thank you so much for turning in to WNRN. We want to thank The Backyard for their support. UVA Corner's Culinary Secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue across from Para Coffee. The Backyard has a seasonal menu, daily specials, and a rotating list of beers on tap. For more info, call them at 434-202-8215. Find them online, thebackyarduva.com. They're also on Facebook. All right, so today we will be talking about reading. We're going to be talking about sort of the top 10 fiction books, the sort of summer reading type thing. But we're going to be doing a little more than that, because when people talk about reading and summer reading, to me it always seems so such a small topic. There's just, you're always missing out on so many other things you could have been reading. So let's, I think I spent 55 minutes trying to set up the microphones. Let's see if I did it properly. Lindsay, proper pronunciation of the last name?
It's Idison.
Lindsay Idison, thank you. Jefferson Madison Regional Library branch manager at the north side. That's up in the Albemarle Square Shopping Center?
Yes, it is.
Lindsay Idison from JRML. JMRL. I'm going to do that all day. Meredith Dickens. Meredith, how are you?
Good morning. I'm great.
And thank you for coming in today. Meredith is at Gordon Avenue Library.
Yes, yeah.
We'll keep turning up that microphone. And Patrick Kilmer, reference specialist at the Central Library.
Good morning, Rick.
Thank you so much. So we have three folks from JMRL sharing their library skills. And over in the corner, well, I can't even see him anymore. We have Sandy McAdams, owner of Daedalus Used Books.
Good morning, Rick. It's nice to see you at Daedalus Museum.
Daedalus Museum?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? It's almost like a museum makes it sound easier to move in and out of than the books. So when I go to a museum, I expect lots of signage and security guards. If I touch something, they swat me away. And when I'm at your store, it's more almost like a haunted house where sometimes books jump out to catch me, and those are the ones that I buy.
Much better description. Thank you.
And for those folks who are listening, especially those tuning in on the Richmond 103.1 or any of the locations, Harrisonburg, Lexington, Lynchburg, driving to Charlottesville, many people come up here for a concert or to to tour Monticello or to eat at one of the restaurants. My goodness, it's 200-plus restaurants in this town. One of the things that you need to do is go to Sandy McAdams' store, because Daedalus, haunted house, haunted museum of books, one of the most incredible places that I've ever been and that you would ever be if you're into reading. And I say that not just because Sandy's in the studio. That place is amazing, and we'll talk a little bit about it through the hour. We are here to talk about books, about reading, a little more than just summer reading, which I attribute summer reading to be sort of popular fiction for grown-ups. True, false? What are the four of you? Meredith?
Yeah.
When somebody says summer reading, what pops into mind?
Well, a lot of people do think beach books, light things that you can just skip through or dip into. But then there are people who use summer, which is a time maybe you're less busy if you're an academic or something, to dip into something more serious that you don't have time to during the rest of the year. So the, I think most people think beach books and light and
the fact
fun.
That I'm not very busy the rest of the year, that's why I think of the light reading part. All right. Great. Again, our guests today, Lindsay Idison, Meredith Dickens, Patrick Kilmer, all from Jefferson Madison Regional Library, where you should be devoting some time and attention, and Sandy McAdams, owner of Daedalus Haunted Museum of Books. I thank the four of you for coming on today. You're welcome to write down the number, or 979-0919, the toll-free number, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. This might be a great program for sending the instant message through WNRN Studio, which is at the AOL account. All right, let's start with the sort of regular, or I guess the more cultural definition of summer reading, at least in my terms, which is the nice, easy to read fictional book. Patrick, do you have suggestions out there for someone who might be looking for that? It's a holiday weekend, but there's still, you know, 2 months to go mm-hmm. with this left.
It's a holiday weekend, and what better time to catch up on some of your lighter reading. And there are quite a few items out there beyond the bestsellers. The current book I'm reading now, The Girl in the Blue Beret, is something I recommend highly for anyone who wants a pleasurable summer read with maybe a little bit of literary polish to it. It's by Bobbi Ann Mason, who is famous for writing in country, and she's writing a story about a World War II bombardier who crash-landed in Belgium and was helped by the local people to escape back to the Allied front. And years later, he decides to go back and find some of these people to find out what happened to them. And the stories he finds and the mysteries involved are very involving and fascinating and probably under the radar for most people who are following the bestseller list.
And I mean, you can find that anywhere. Again, how about give us the title and the last name? After we give a description, let's start with the title and the author's name, and then you know talk about what why you sure. like it. But let's finish with that again for someone who's you know actively looking for a pen and pencil when they get caught up in it.
Well, that was The Girl in the Blue Beret, and it's by Bobbi Ann Mason.
Lindsay?
Great writer.
How about for you?
I'm currently reading an autobiography and a biography. The biography is The Women Jefferson Loved by Virginia Scharf, which is a very accessible history of the women in Jefferson's life from his mother, Jane, through his wife, mistress, daughters, any woman. I think it's something that anybody interested in local history or Jefferson would enjoy. And I'm also reading the memoir by Ashley Judd, All That Is Bitter and Sweet, because I do love a dysfunctional family memoir.
And the first one doesn't count?
Oh, yes.
I think
definitely
many people would
counts.
Now say that Jefferson, with all the knowledge learned over the last century, would also might fall into that category.
You make a good point. It would be interesting to go back in time and be in a room with Jefferson and his daughters and the many, many intertwined relatives who would be in the room with you.
All right, so let's do the titles and the authors again.
The Women Jefferson Loved by Virginia Scharf and All That Is Bitter and Sweet by Ashley Judd.
Sandy, for some reason I think with... Again, being familiar with your store, what are you reading now? I expect an odd reply for some reason.
I'm reading a Virginia Woolf book again called Mrs. Dalloway because we have a very eccentric book club of four men that have known each other for 35 years, mostly from the CNO. But we also read a book which I cannot say enough about, which is A Month in a Country by C.L. Carr.
Oh, I love that book.
Yeah.
And it reminds me so much of a poem. It's 108 pages, and it just reads like a poem. But do you want, are you going to come back to what we would advise for some reason reading, even if we're not reading it?
Danny, we have another 51 minutes here on Wake Up Call with Lindsay, Meredith, Patrick, and Sandy talking about books, types of books to read, favorite books to read, what to offer other people as suggestions or your kids. So we'll be doing this for the rest of the hour, and I'll promise to come back to you with that. You mentioned the Virginia Woolf book.
Yeah, Mrs. Dalloway.
And the other book that you mentioned?
C.L. Carr, A Month in the Country. I cannot say enough about the beauty of it.
And Meredith, what are you reading now?
Well, this is not a hidden gem, but I just finished listening to Tina Fey's Bossy Pants, and it was hilarious.
Does that say anything about you as a person? I mean, what person is reading? Does that say anything about the person themselves?
It says a lot about Meredith.
Oh, thank you, Patrick. She's got a local connection. She went to UVA, and then she mentions that briefly in the book. Doesn't really talk about it. But I generally have an audiobook going in my car in addition to the couple of books that I'll be reading in print. And this was my audiobook, and she reads it herself. And I definitely recommend that because she's got a great voice. You can hear it, all the humor that she intended. So.
Folks are talking about what you are reading or recently finished, and I throw out that sort of snide comment about what does it say about yourself. Just before I announce that I have been, in fact, I think I finished the last one that I have in hand, which is I've been reading all the Nancy Drew books that I had as a kid that at some point I had to box up for fear that my father was going to toss them out. And I have, I don't know, 15. And so for some reason for the last month, I've been reading all the Nancy Drew books. Not very challenging, but really interesting to read these books culturally, because Nancy takes a trip to, New Mexico or Arizona, and so you get all these sort of silly phrases that get tossed around while she's visiting. Compadre, and you know, all these silly things that when you're, I don't know, 8, 10, and at that time period, whenever you're reading it back in the 1970s, it just makes me think, how does that stick in your head, and what does that tell you about that style person, you know, people who live across the country who are cowboys, etc. I found that to be really interesting. And now I need to move on. I think I'm going to go read the Hardy Boys.
Oh, ready for the hard stuff.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, it's a step up. 11:12 on the wake-up call as we are talking with Lindsay and Meredith and Patrick from Jefferson Madison Regional Library, Sandy McAdams, owner of Daedalus Books here in Charlottesville. We want to thank Blue Ridge Graphics for allowing us to be on air today. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. Online, it's brgtshirts.com. All right, you're welcome to call us up, tell us what you're reading, or whether you're looking for a suggestion if you have need for something, because that's something the library folks do, right? Don't you suggest somebody comes up to you and says, I just finished this, I'm looking for something else? Lindsay, I see you nodding your head.
We absolutely do that. It's called Reader's Advisory. We do it for children, teens, adults, anybody who wants a suggestion, we're happy to give them. We actually have book lists, too, on a counter. If you don't want to talk to a librarian, there are lists you can look at.
Librarians are scary.
But
I have a question for Sandy, something that he said. You're in a four-man book reading group, and you're reading Virginia Woolf, Mrs. Dalloway. I'm just curious as to how your group picked that particular book.
The reason this started, I should say that, is because, number one, we have known each other for 35 years, and number two is we all love each other, and it's John Conover, David Simpson, who now owns the CNO, and Philip Stafford, who was my partner at the CNO, and they're all very, very smart guys, but they asked if I would do it and then if I would pick all the books.
Yeah.
So none of them had read Mrs. Dalloway, and I wanted to see what their reaction would be to that kind of prose, because she's a...
very difficult stream of consciousness.
I think if you let it go, it moves right along, and don't try to figure out every sentence, because she's so smart. She also, I'll digress as I usually do, is she wrote what I, for my taste, is my favorite essay on Shakespeare. And she says we all go along writing, and we're pretty good at it, and we go along, and then William Shakespeare goes along, and then suddenly he jumps up about 2,000 feet, and all of us are wondering, where did he go? How does he do this? Mm-hmm. So I think she's so smart in seeing that. I think she's very smart in her own writing to do exactly what she's capable of, and she does it so well.
Oh.
So that's why we chose it. And we also chose two poems. We also chose... I asked him to read the first chapter. I think there should be no writing schools. I think the only writing school should be that you go home and read the first chapter of Treasure Island 50 times. And then you go home and read the first chapter of Great Expectations 50 times. And then you'll know how it's done, because those two first chapters are without parallel, I think, in modern prose. They just do everything that you're supposed to do. So that was the other choice. And so far we've had four meetings.
And how many times do you have to read Virginia Woolf?
Virginia, one if we can do it.
So let's talk a minute about the classics. Sandy talks about Treasure Island and Great Expectations. What are some of the classics that, at that time in your life, especially as a high school student, I was forced to read Great Expectations, and, you know, it just didn't catch me. The first chapter may be unparalleled great prose, but at some times in your life, it just, you don't appreciate it for what it is. Are there books out there that each of the four of you might mention as something that qualifies as one of the greatest ever, that at the time you didn't appreciate it, but now, later in your life, you say, hey, as an older adult, I can understand a little better. And Meredith, you're nodding your head on this one.
Well, I immediately thought of The Great Gatsby. I know I read it in high school, and I learned all of the symbolism and all of the, you know, literary things you're supposed to learn when you're reading a great book. But because of the big read, which is something that the library does, every year we pick a book for the entire community to read, and we did The Great Gatsby a couple years ago, and I, because of that, went back to it. And sure, there are some things wrong with it, but I read the language in a different way now that I'm grown up, and I got a lot more out of it. And I was glad to go back to it, because I had written it off. So it is nice to go back to things and find that you did miss something in those teenage years when you knew everything.
As an adult, maybe you don't need your Cliff Notes
to
appreciate it a little better.
You can do it just for the pleasure. But also, you have more perspective. When you're a teenager, you know everything. There's nothing you're going to, you know, they can't tell you anything.
You've truly been to a party of that size and had that much fun. And
well,
his
maybe.
Party wasn't anything like the one you went to on Friday night.
Right, exactly.
Patrick, do you have anything that might fall into this category?
Well, I remember reading The Sound and the Fury in high school and not appreciating it very much. I found the first section, Benji's section, very difficult. And I was annoyed that the book, which the first three sections involved three brothers and their feelings about their sister, Caddy. And then the last section is basically from the point of view of the family servant. And I always felt Caddy, who is so central to all these three brothers, never gets her section. And I resented that. But later, when I read it again, I came to appreciate the genius that is in those first three sections, and how he's able to tell something from very limited point of view. Another person who's thinking of suicide on the day that he's following his, again, stream of consciousness kind of thinking in his narrative. And yet I still want Caddy section. I still want him to come back, Faulkner to come back and write Caddy section and give her her voice. But I do appreciate the book much more now.
Lindsay?
I think that in high school, when we read books by Thomas Hardy and George Eliot, I did not really appreciate them. But high school is meant, the high school classes are meant to be an introduction to literature. It's not meant to be your sole reading of the book for your entire life. The teachers are trying to introduce a piece of great literature to you so you'll know who the author is. You'll begin to understand what good writing is and imagery, themes. And then when you come back to them as an adult, you bring, as Meredith said, you bring a new perspective. You bring maturity to it. So I have liked George Eliot, and especially Middlemarch, as an adult, but I did not appreciate her as a teenager.
Sandy, where do you stand on this?
With huge anger. Why anyone would allow high school teachers to assign books like that? Someone here recently has assigned Moll Flanders. And I'm very glad, because it's the only way I would ever sell any Moll Flanders books. But you don't want Moll Flanders in high school. You don't want Tess. You don't want Faulkner, unless you assign the Bear. What you want is stuff that kids read. It's not to introduce them to particular titles. It's to introduce them to the beauty and greatness of literature. I assigned in a private school once Kerouac's On the Road. The kids just ate it up. And they wanted to read more of him, and they wanted to read books like him. They weren't bored to tears. I had to read, God Almighty, Silas Marner, help me. And it's just dreadful, and it ruins people's ideas about books. And I think all of us, and these guys are all smart, and they didn't want to do it.
Yeah, I understand that, because, you know, I had trouble, was not interested in Great Expectations and similar style books at that time, but someone said, why don't you try Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test? I was like, oh my gosh, look at what these guys are doing. How cool is that? And it may not have been the best and most pronounced style of writing, but from that, I went, you know, I just sprayed out to similar authors, which took me to similar authors. And so it was the book that, and eventually I stumbled into books that I was asked to read and, you know, was going to be reading later on, whether it was in my senior year or in college. And it was that book that led me to read a wide variety of authors who all make the list of the top 20 best. And I understand what Sandy's saying there. Everyone needs that book.
Well, you know, Harry Potter was that for a lot of children.
Ah.
A lot of kids who never read, never enjoyed reading, never found a book to be appealing. When Harry Potter came along, it was boom. Oh, now I get it. This is a wonderful story about a great kid in a magical environment. Give me more.
Yeah, and that's, it's amazing what this one author has done worldwide. I guess it's because it's a different type of culture that we live in now. Other authors back in the early 1900s had no way of reaching. How many languages is Harry Potter published in now? 40, 50 different languages around the world? Unbelievable. 11:23 here on the Wake Up Call. Let me do the weather. We'll be right back with our guests, Sandy McAdams, Patrick Kilmer, Meredith Dickens, and Lindsay Idison. It is the Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Partly sunny with severe thunderstorms likely today, highs in the lower 90s. Mostly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms likely tonight, at lows 65 to 70. Partly sunny with a chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon tomorrow, highs in the lower 90s. Right now it's cloudy out there. Valley, it's 82, 84 in Lynchburg, 83 in Richmond, and already 86 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And today's programming also brought to you by Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, where you are encouraged to be kind, have fun, and do the right thing. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports can be found at Barracks Road here in Charlottesville. They have three locations in Richmond. For more store information online, brms.com. All right, back with our guests today from Jefferson Madison Regional Library, Lindsay Idison, Patrick Kilmer, and Meredith Dickens, and Sandy McAdams, owner of Daedalus Used Books here in Charlottesville. Sandy, I think I cut you off there to give the weather. We were talking about the wide variety of books, Harry Potter, published in 40 countries. We were talking about finding that one book that carries you forward into others.
Yeah, I see that, and I certainly see it with what they were saying about Harry Potter going, and people go on to other series of kids' books. Even Patrick O'Brien, when people started to read Patrick O'Brien, then they read C.S. Forster. And then there were other people. They even got into Melville and Conrad. And next thing you know, everybody's reading instead of boring yourself to tears with these other things. I'll tell you another thing. If someone tells me that this book is better than that book, I have no idea what they're saying. If you're saying to me that you like this book more than another book, I understand that completely. But I will defy anyone, anytime, to show me why Marcel Proust is better than Stephen King. I they can't do it. One person likes one thing, one person likes the other.
It's definitely true. It's there's no judgment. It's what you like. And whatever draws you into the story, whatever author can bring you joy from the reading, that's a good book.
Gets me to the heart.
Yeah.
Certainly my love of detective fiction came from an early introduction to Sherlock Holmes, like the Study of Scarlet.
Well, that's made the news recently, I think, right? Didn't I? I think I read, and I won't. This may not be exact, and someone's welcome to call and correct me if I'm wrong, is that someone brought up a request to remove that book off, I think, the sixth grade reading list in Albemarle County school system, and based on some, I guess, slanderous language about Mormons. In a fictional book, it has been taken off the list. I believe Dr. Moran has said, fine, we'll do that. Not taken out of the school or out of the library, but taken off the mandatory, or maybe it's the just suggested, reading list for sixth graders in the county.
Yes, I'm sorry to hear that, because it's a great tale, and of course it's the origin story of Sherlock Holmes meeting Dr. Watson.
Kind of like Harry Potter number one.
Yes.
How do you pick up from number two if you don't understand all that stuff?
Exactly. I mean, my feeling is that the book is not one of the better Sherlock Holmes books. Certainly the second half, which takes place entirely in the Conan Doyle's image of the American West and Mormon country, is less interesting to read, my point of view, for the plot. But that shouldn't prevent anyone from enjoying the story for what it is. And it certainly led me into reading way too many detective fiction after that. So that's definitely a case of a book that led me into other pastures.
Well, I want to get into sort of, books that shouldn't be read in the school system, which I would assume none of the four of you feel that there are any. But let's talk about series for a moment, because when you get into Sherlock Holmes, obviously there's a series of books there. And that's something I always enjoyed, was someone suggesting that I read this book, or somehow finding a book that was a series. And then I'm like, oh, good, I like this one. And now I have 4 or 12 or more to read, knowing that I'll at least enjoy a handful of them a lot. Let's start with detective series, Patrick, since you bring that up. Are there, other than Sherlock Holmes, is there an author or a series title that you would suggest as part of our reading topic for the day?
Oh, there are so many, and such a wide variety of tastes, which is the great thing about that particular genre, is that for those who like your comfortable English cozy little mysteries, with your basics, get the suspects all in a room and reveal who done it at the end. You've got the inheritors, I guess, to Agatha Christie. That would be more Lindsay's specialty. I'm more in the hard-boiled school of walking down the mean streets and following the heirs to Raymond Chandler and Dashiell Hammett. And, you know, Robert B. Parker is certainly a
Do you pick
writer.
The first book? I mean, if someone wants to take Chandler, do you go to, do you go to the library? Do you go to Daedalus? Do you go online and find whatever the title is for book number one, and do you start there? Or is there something that you feel is a more gripping tale that might pull you in better, and then you can jump back to the first one and go forward?
Because I'm a chronology hound, I like going for the first one.
Right, the reference specialist,
yes.
At the Central Library.
But in passing through some of the series that go through my hands, occasionally I'll read the book blurb on, like, book number four of a series. I go, well, that sounds really interesting. But then I'll go back and find the first one first, just because I'm that way. But not everyone has to read a series like that. I'm sure that Sandy has seen my face many a time coming into his store looking for titles that the library doesn't carry, that, you know, for more obscure series that I'm trying to hunt down.
But what does that say, that Daedalus has books that the library doesn't carry?
I think it says something worse about me, that I'm nearly maxed out on my library card and I'm still buying too many books in stores.
Sandy, we'll come back to that, but Lindsay is ready to fall out of her chair now that we've been talking about series and Agatha Christie was mentioned.
There is a great website that Meredith introduced me to called StopYourKillingMe.com. For people who like mysteries and want to figure out the order of the mysteries. When you go to the website, you look up the author you're interested in, and then under the author's name are all the series that he or she has written by character, and then in the order the series happen.
Because they're not like Nancy Drew, where it says number one, number two along the spine.
They kind of get away from that with adult books.
Yeah. Until you get to Janet Ivanovich.
Well, that's true. Or Sue Grafton.
Yeah.
So what was the title of the website again?
StopYourKillingMe.com.
And Patrick mentioned that you're more, or at least I took that to mean that you're more of the person in the room, Agatha Christie style. But what is your... What is your suggestion here in this category?
I read a lot of mysteries, and not just... I don't particularly like cozy mysteries, but I also don't like torture, so I'm somewhere in between. But I do like there to be somebody dead.
Thoughtful.
Tying into the Sherlock Holmes, I like the Laurie King series. The Beekeeper's Apprentice is the first one, starring Mary Russell, who is a young woman in England in the early 20th century, and she's walking on the downs, and she trips over a man, and the man is Sherlock Holmes.
Ooh, painting cool. Bees' wings.
Yes.
And what was that, book again?
The first one in the series is The Beekeeper's Apprentice.
And who's the author?
Laurie King.
Laurie King, not Stephen King. Any relation?
I don't think so.
It's a miracle, that book.
It's a wonderful series, if you can sort of get your head around the fact that Sherlock Holmes and Mary Russell become romantically involved.
Meredith, I'll come back to you, but Sandy, mm-hmm. we made a crack about how, you know, that you have books that Patrick can find in your shop that may not be at the library. Give me your series that you would like. Doesn't have to be a crime series or a detective series, but what series do you suggest to someone out there?
I don't think I would, because I'm not that way. But I would say what Patrick says is true of most readers. When they come in, they won't buy a book if it's number three and they haven't read any. They want number one to start. And I think it not only because I might not like to do it, but I don't see why anyone would have to read the first Raymond Chandler. I mean, he just writes stuff. But in some cases, you learn the development of the character. Another guy that's someone who's very, very popular is Lee Child.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if he develops as a character or not, but certainly things happen to him in earlier books that he recalls in later books.
Lee Child is creator of the Jack Reacher series. And Jack Reacher is a former Army military policeman who, like a modern cowboy, he drifts from town to town, finding himself just happening to fall into an adventure that involves his unique investigative and practically superhuman skills for solving a case.
Again, our guest today, as we talk about reading, not just summer reading, but reading in general, finding the book that works for you or your kids, which we'll get into in just a moment. Meredith Dickens, branch manager at Gordon Avenue Library. Lindsay Idison, branch manager at Northside. Patrick Kilner, reference specialist at the Central Library, all from Jefferson Madison Regional Library. Sandy McAdams, owner of Daedalus Books here in Charlottesville, something that everyone who likes books should check out. Meredith, your suggestion for series?
Well, you mentioned books for younger readers. I read a lot of young adult fiction, which is in the library. That means anywhere from grade 6 to 12, but basically for middle grade readers and early teenagers. One series that I keep looking for, and always looking for the next one, is Michael Scott's The Secrets of Nicholas Flamel. The first book was called The Alchemist, and it's fantasy about a pair of twins who get embroiled in a world domination plot by evil people, and it brings a lot of...
The way twins do.
Yeah, it's true. Who knew? They were just normal twins in San Francisco, and there's an entire another world of magic, and Nicholas Flamel is the immortal alchemist who's been living for 500 years, and he draws them into this world of magic. Lots of world myth figures, ancient gods who actually are still around. It's a great fantasy adventure, and he's come out with the fourth book this year, I believe.
I don't know that so. This is true, and I'm sure that there's got to be one person out there if I'm wrong. But isn't Nicholas Flamel the name of the guy in the Harry Potter book who had something to do with...
The Philosopher's Stone, or the Sorcerer's Stone.
The Sorcerer's Stone, yes.
Yes, and it's the same historical figure that many fantasy books touch on. They use him because he's the guy who can live forever, because he found out this alchemical elixir.
A little nerdiness there from myself. All right, 11:36 on the wake-up call. Let me take a moment and give this info out there. If you're a regular listener to the wake-up call, you should think about joining the team. Wake-up call is currently looking for a new show producer. Kristen is moving on to college. Producer helps answer and screen phone calls, assists with some of the technical aspects of the show. No previous radio experience is needed, and it's a wonderful way for you to learn about radio and support the programming. For more information or to apply, email wakeup@wnrn.org. All right, back with our guests as we talk about books, suggestions, different styles. A question, I don't know who to throw this one out to. I guess everyone probably has their own thoughts on it. As someone who reads fiction, how do you get started on nonfiction? Because I think for many of us, at least for myself, there's a wall between them, and maybe unfairly put there by myself. But how do you go from someone who reads the fiction section, who never walks over to the other side of the library, how do you do that? Lindsay?
There's a lot of really good nonfiction that reads like fiction. I think you could start with a topic you're interested in or something that appeals to you. If you like danger and adventure, something like Into Thin Air by John Krakauer. I like nonfiction that tells a good story. I enjoyed Plain Insanity, which is about the life of a flight attendant and what they go through, and it was eye-opening. I also enjoyed Waiter Rant, I think it was based on a blog by a waiter about his life as a waiter. And that kind of thing really reads like a fictional story.
And so what category would I find those in at the library?
Unfortunately, nonfiction is classified by a Dewey number. So the Plain Insanity one is in with the books about transportation. And Waiter Rant, I think, is in the 600s and, like, inns and bed and breakfast.
Restaurants to go to where your waiter won't, you know, spit in your food because he's not ranting about you?
Exactly. I think the best case is to ask the librarian for some reader's advisory.
Which all three of you do.
Also, we do displays. I know that they do them at Gordon. We do them at Northside to try to highlight books in different areas, and especially appealing books that we think people will grab.
And Sandy, how does someone who walks into your store, because I would assume that there are a fair number who walk into Daedalus, like Patrick, who's looking for a particular book. How does someone who walks into your place get any sort of suggestion? For those who haven't been in there, this is like an old house with small rooms, large rooms, hallways, stairs, and everywhere, every shelf. The only thing that doesn't have a book on it is the ceiling and the floor.
I think we have a map, and you have us. Patty, my friend who volunteers with me every day, she knows the shop, so you ask us and we'll guide you. But a used bookshop is not the best place for a specific book. We have lots of sections just with the writer, with like C.S. Lewis. I would say we must have at least 50 sections just with the writer, either because we can't figure out where to put them, or it makes sense. There's a guy named Harold Nicholson, who was one of my favorite nonfiction writers. We have a Harold Nicholson section, which no one's ever heard of the guy. But, for instance, he wrote a book called The Treaty of Vienna. I still don't know. I've read it twice. I still don't know what The Treaty of Vienna was. But it was beautiful to read because he's such a skillful writer. And that's why you have that section. So we would guide you to a section. What she said about guiding you away, suggesting things that would not be fiction, I think travel books are an excellent way to do it. There's a guy named Peter Fleming, one of those lunatic Brits that I love. And he has a broken gun and then a pound note. And he says, geez, you know, I thought I might as well walk from Paris to wherever, you know, Siberia. And he does it. And it's just thrilling to read, and he writes so well.
All right, we got a call. I guess Ellie wants to be with us. Let me push all the right buttons. All right, Ellie.
Hi. I'm interested in what you're talking about because I wrote a history book, and it's written as a story, you know, with a whole plot. It's not chronological. And I had trouble getting a publisher because it crossed those lines. And so I'm curious if, I know that there are a couple of publishers around that specialize in that, if there's a way to get a new genre in the libraries that are kind of, you know, they're non-history stories or something so that people could get into that more and realize, you know, that they're not buried in there with just the straight chronological, this happened here, this happened then, and now we're done.
Well, let's, folks, who wants to start? Meredith?
I'm not sure if I understood the question or if I heard it correctly. There was something in there about making a new genre or where when a book doesn't fall within the things we automatically expect.
Ellie, do me a favor and repeat that. Repeat the first part of the question about creating the new genre real quick.
Okay, how can we create some genres that are nonfiction, but they're story-oriented? They're maybe first-person, or they are not just dry chronological history, but they are nonfiction all the same.
All right.
Definitely a trend in publishing now. We call it narrative nonfiction, and it's what Lindsay alluded to before. It is nonfiction that, as you say, reads like a story. It's easier to read. There are a bunch of authors who are doing that now. We don't have a specific place in the library for it, but
why not? I mean, you can't create any new Dewey points, can you?
Well, they do all the time. You know, if something new comes up, they sort of tweak the subject headings. But if it's about something, that's where it's going to go, regardless of whether it's dry or readable. Just like in fiction, if a book is dry or readable, it's all in fiction. And that's where the librarians or the folks you talk to kind of know, oh, this one's a good one. And we do create book lists and that sort of thing that that can guide you to the very readable nonfiction.
So, Ellie, it sounds like you just need to use your librarian a bit more.
I'm sorry, say that again?
I think you just need to use your librarian a bit more than you have been.
Yeah, well, I know that there are numerous publishers out there that are starting to specialize in this. And, like, photography, there's an environmental portraiture. You know, it has a kind of section within the larger realm where you can identify what you're doing. And it seems like we should be able to come up with something like that for history, because that's a more popular kind of take on writing that part now, that we could come up with a new label for it and identify it.
All right. Thanks for calling, Ellie.
You can write as well as Dan Morris can write. You can write a three-volume history of the British Empire that you cannot put down.
All right.
That's true. Or Stephen Ambrose writes very narrative-oriented history that's fascinating to read. Actually, you have to blame Tom Wolfe and his electric Kool-Aid acid test.
Yeah. Well, I blame him for a lot of stuff. A lot of it being, bad clothing. All right, 11:45 here on the wake-up call. Let's do this.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
All right. In this week's issue, did you ever wonder if the Main Street Arena is making money or if more geese will be killed around the airport? And what about the arrest of that protester? This week, The Hook checks in on past stories to bring you up-to-date answers on whatever happened. And there's a common and perhaps correct perception that older job applicants are at a disadvantage when it comes to being hired. Read how oldies can be goodies when it comes to hiring. The Hook, nutritious and delicious. And let's thank Dixon Disposal for their support today. Dixon reminds you that you can reduce household garbage by purchasing products with reuse and recycling in mind. Small changes in your lifestyle can keep the planet green for years to come. When Dixon's picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. On the phone, it's 978-2111. Online, it's DixonDisposal.com. All right, back with our guests today. We have Sandy McAdams, Patrick Kilmer, Meredith Dickens, and Lindsay Idison as we talk about books, suggestions, topics in general, how to create new genres in the library system, which apparently doesn't appear to be quite as easy as Ellie would like it to be.
Well, if I could say, it's not about, well, at least in the library, I think, because if you can constantly make new genres, there's a danger of balkanizing all of the, if that's the right word, definitely narrowing and narrowing down, in so that you get I'm not sure what I'm saying.
It just requires the librarians to move the books all the time. I think that's why it's not
and
being done.
What we were saying before, a book is good. For every reader has its book, and every book has its reader, and it's just a matter of finding it and finding a place.
If the quality is high enough, we'll find a place for it in the library.
I like that.
There you go.
Thank you, Patrick. Every book has its reader. And that's
yes,
true, right?
I didn't come up with that, but
just depends on how many readers it has.
Right, right.
I agree with Sandy that travel books are great nonfiction to read. I mean, outside of the Fodor's, Frommer's, Eyewitness Guides, there are wonderful writers. I mean, Bill Bryson is an example of someone who's very appealing, very funny, and a travel writer.
Well, speaking of traveling, so again, to go back to sort of the start of the program, talking about summer reading for books, and I think I opened by asking what you're currently reading during this sort of a holiday weekend or what you've recently finished. What do you give the kids to read? You want the kids to be quiet in the car. Not all people can read while riding. But what do you give the kids for the rain time or the downtime on the trip? Lindsay?
I've got one, The Strange Case of Origami Yoda by Tom Engelberger. This is an appealing story for kids who like the Diary of a Wimpy Kid books by Jeff Kinney.
Oh, those are great.
The Strange Case of Origami Yoda, is a middle school oriented story. A boy comes, a boy who's sort of an outcast or a, you know, seen as a loser comes to school, and he's got on his finger a Yoda figure made out of origami. And Yoda comes to solve the problems of the other kids in the class.
All right,
I won't
now,
tell
that's
you anymore.
Something
you
I'm
have to
buy.
Read it.
Sandy, do you have that book at the shop?
No, but I'm going to get it to read myself.
I love that. Any other suggestions for, you know, that toss
for
out there?
For teens, dystopian fiction, which Meredith can probably address better than I, is very in. Obviously, The Hunger Games is the current It book, but there are other series and there are other standalones. I'm reading Matched by Ali Condie. Mm-hmm.
We'll get to Meredith in just a second. How about for younger kids? What do you get the 5-year-old to the 8-year-old group?
There are so many classic books that they haven't read and been introduced to. For instance, Beverly Cleary and the Ramona series, or the Ralph the Motorcycle Riding Mouse series. There's so many classics. Mr. Popper's Penguins, because of the movies, is having a resurgence, and that's a great story.
I was always a fan of Paddington Bear. Meredith, so jump into that.
Well, you mentioned, you know, In the Car with the Kids, and one series that I've come to know is Hank the Cow Dog is fantastic, especially the audiobooks. If you're listening to the audiobooks in the car, it's something that the entire family can enjoy. The kids, it's a funny series about a cow dog out west, and he solves mysteries, and the adults will laugh and the kids will laugh, and that's a fun series.
As someone
who's the whole family,
I've said this for several years now. I'm going to write a book about my dog. For those who don't know, Lazarus, my dog, he's the legend of Lazarus is that he lost his eyes and got his scars from having a fight with a bear. He's that type of hound dog.
Aww.
And so one of the first things that I was told was write it so the adults enjoy it too.
Yes.
That is what gets the adults to buy the book. Those are the ones that do best with the family.
Right.
So it sounds
right.
Like Hank the Cow Dog, I love the title.
Yeah, and it's a whole series of mysteries. The kids will just like the fun stories, but there's an extra layer that the adults will appreciate. And especially the audiobooks, the way they're read with the voices. I like it.
Sandy or Patrick, any suggestions into the kids, whether they're teens, whether they're younger than that?
Well,
for me, Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah.
But I'll be damned, you're going to give me time to read this adult list, aren't you?
Of course I am. It's 11:51. We have plenty of time left on Wake Up Call. Let me take a moment, though, and thank L. Oppelman for their support today. L. Oppelman's is Central Virginia's complete music headquarters, continuously operated since 1890 at 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg. L. Oppelman's music department is now featuring acoustic guitars, banjos, mandolins, and violins, as well as electric guitar packages from Fender and TV. Also available, complete drum sets. L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street in Lynchburg. Online, it's loppelman.com. All right, so let's do that, Patrick.
Well, I do have a sleeper young adult book that I'm particularly fond of called Airborne by Kenneth Oppel.
Oppel?
Oppel? Yeah. And
how do you spell it?
Oppel.
Okay.
And he writes. It's basically a kind of steampunk novel, set in sort of alternate world like ours, but where the steam engine became the primary technology that fuels robots and dirigibles and all sorts of technology born out of the Victorian era, and Airborne is a pretty exciting tale involving flying ships and pirates. And to reflect on Treasure Island, there's pirates, there's a feisty young girl, and an adventuresome, spunky boy who together have this thrilling adventure that I think that any gender would enjoy reading and any age.
All right, so let's do this now. Sandy's got his list. I don't know if anyone else prepared a list of things to share. Two of my favorite authors, for those looking for something new to read that maybe you've heard of or haven't read or wondered, Kurt Vonnegut, one of my favorite authors of all time, and especially with the audiobooks, I love Sedaris. David Sedaris, is his voice just cracks me up, as well as his writing. Holidays on Ice, I suggest everyone get, because David Sedaris as an elf is, I don't suggest that you read it while or listen to it in the car, because you have to pull over before you have to go to the bathroom and wet your pants. I'm laughing. Sandy McAdams, you have a list that you would like to share as suggestions. Fire away.
These are orders. I used to go to Provincetown the first time I ever followed an older woman, I ended up in Provincetown. And people on the beach with their naked kids in the late 60s had Marcel two-volume Remembrance of Things Past and never opened them. But if you want some books that you will open and that will make your life more interesting, do you have your pencils? And unknown for the most part. Mary Webb's Precious Bane, Rosamund Lehman, The Ballad and the Source, Roger MacDonald, Mr. Darwin's Shooter, J.P. Ackerley, My Dog Tulip, Kate Chopin, The Awakening, Shirley Hazard, The Great Fire, Nancy Mitford, Love in a Cold Climate, and Alan Bennett, The Uncommon Reader. That's it. By God, call me. I'll give them to you again.
Well, you know what? I may get Kristen, if you have that written down so she can read it, maybe we'll get Kristen to put that on the podcast list. She's probably out there cursing me at the moment. 11:55 on the wake-up call as we talk about books with our guests from Jefferson Madison Regional Library, as well as Sandy McAdams from Daedalus Used Books here in Charlottesville. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS-FM Sweetfire Amherst Lynchburg. Lindsay, Meredith, Patrick, did anyone bring a list that you'd like to make sure to add? Lindsay?
When people ask me for a good read, I always recommend Time and Again by Jack Finney, which was published, I think, back in the 70s. But it's one of my favorite books to recommend because it has time travel, a mystery, a romance, photographs of New York in the 19th century. It's great. And for more current writers, I've been recommending Sarah Addison Allen for her magical realism, and Kate Morton, who's an English novelist.
All right, Patrick?
Well, I am a fan of the Jane Whitefield series by Thomas Perry. Jane Whitefield is a Native American woman who sort of acts as a one-woman witness protection agency for various characters who find themselves on the run and can't turn to the authorities for help. And I also like the Doc Ford series. That's by Randy Wayne White, yeah. And Doc Ford is a marine biologist who is also an ex-CIA or some kind of special forces character in his background, and he works out of Florida. He's loosely based on John Steinbeck's Doc from Kennery Row and Sweet Thursday.
For some reason, I realize what you said now, but I thought you said John Steinbeck's dog.
Oh, right.
It took an extra second to process that.
Doc, not dog.
Meredith?
This summer marks the 10th anniversary of the publishing of Neil Gaiman's American Gods, and I know they're bringing out a special edition. That remains one of my favorites. It's a road trip, again, with world mythological characters.
We're seeing your style here.
Yeah, but fantasy for people who don't necessarily want to read fantasy. Neil Gaiman's just one of the best storytellers that I know of. And Marissa de los Santos is a good fiction writer. Love Walked In was her first novel, and I like that one too. I can always recommend that.
And if you come to the library looking for any of these books and you find they're checked out, you can always place a hold on them, and we will notify you when they come in. In fact, we have a new notification system now by telephone, where we will notify the patron through as soon as the book is checked in. If you're not getting a notice through your email, and you have the option of choosing email or telephone notification, then you'll get an automatic telephone recording that will inform you that the book is in.
All right. This is in place of if you used to get mailers in the postal. post mail. We're doing away with those to save on the postage, and we'll be phoning people instead. But if you've always gotten emails from us, there'll be no change. You'll still get emails.
All right. About 60 seconds left. Anything that we've overlooked, a book or a quick comment that anyone would like to throw out there?
Come to the library.
Catherine Erskine is a local author. She won the National Book Award last year for Mockingbird. She has a new book out, The Absolute Value of Mike, which I just finished. It's great. A lot of fun characters. She's going to be at the Central Library this Tuesday for an author visit. Definitely worth a visit.
And if you come to Daedalus Hughes Bookshop and we don't have the book, someone has bought it, we put an ankle bracelet on you that will not allow you to go into another shop, and you'll have to come back to Daedalus to buy it from us.
or get it from the library.
I'm hoping eventually my book comes in, because this thing is really weighing me down.
All right. Happy holidays to everyone again. You can find Lindsay Idison at Northside Library, Meredith Dickens at the Gordon Avenue Library, Patrick Kilmer, they keep downstairs in the Central Library, and Sandy McAdams. Sandy, which days are you at the bookstore?
Monday through Thursday.
All right, thanks again. The podcast will be up. And, you know, just listen, find the book that likes you. I think Meredith said it. Every book has
its reader, and every reader has their book.
Every book has its reader. Every reader has its book. Thank you so much. Enjoy your holiday. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.